Greetings and welcome to the program, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. And color me relieved. The Clintons have a plan. That's right. Well, where there's smoke is, where there's smoke, but there's not fire. I think that's what Hillary Clinton said this week about brewing scandal over emails coming out of Clinton State Department and close connection to the Clinton Family Foundation. But don't worry, Hillary has a plan for what she's going to do once elected president, which, of course, we'll get to that, too. Maybe she shouldn't be measuring those drapes quite yet. But apparently, if you find this humorous, then good. I do, too. They've got a plan of how they're going to separate the Clinton Foundation from the Oval Office. And what they want to do, and there's a great Wall Street Journal piece earlier this week, James Grimaldi and Rebecca Bellhouse write a piece on how the foundation is already discussing plans of how to insulate Hillary Clinton from potential conflicts if, read when, she's elected president. Well, you know, Hillary absolutely thinks she thinks she has us in the bag. And I think as evidence of some of that delusion is how she's approaching this whole scandal with the emails. And the best part about it, of course, is that her rationalizations, whether she actually believes them or not, are being repeated and amplified by the media, almost as if her assertions alone are standalone proof that, well, that there's nothing to see here. Move along, folks. Now, we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but this is just great. Because in these plans that are being drawn up, and the way that the article, right? I mean, I know it's the Journal, but they as they're writing the article, they're trying to explain how this is, you know, how there's these measures, there's this planning that's going on to separate the Clintons from their own eponymous foundation. And what's their plan? Do you know what the plan is? The plan is, well, to put Chelsea Clinton on the board. That's right. So the idea is even as of the summer, so this goes back a little ways, a couple months, allies are pushing for Chelsea to leave the board, but they want her to be involved back in it. They basically want her to be in it and connected and running it. This is crazy. So I thought the entire objective was here to end and to shut down the organ. I mean, what was this idea of shutting the Global Initiative down and the Family Foundation down? So if you're just waking up this week and have thought to yourself, now what really is it that's going on? What is all this brouhaha over these emails? And what is this Associated Press report? Wait, I thought these guys are part of the drive-by media. What are they doing? Finally, reporting on the Clintons. Well, I'll explain it all to you. So just follow me here for a minute. One thing, the part of the story here is the stonewalling. Okay, because this investigation, there are a number of media outlets who now for years, going back to 2013, have been trying to obtain these emails that have been going back and forth between Hillary Clinton's aides and people in the State Department and other branches of government as well. Well, one of those aides, of course, is Cheryl Mills. And you know, one of the things that Hillary Clinton's done very cleverly is she's made all of her aides, she hires attorneys, which is a good move. I got to tell you, if you're going to do bad stuff, only hire lawyers, licensed attorneys, to be your cohorts. Because what she's insisted at every stage is that they aren't just her assistants. They aren't just her, henchmen, but they're also her lawyers, and that attorney-client privilege applies. And she's played the privilege card very heavily. So Cheryl Mills, well, Huma's not a lawyer. She's not, and that's why she's particularly vulnerable. So in all this scandal, what basically is going on is this, and it's so obviously transparent. It doesn't pass the smell test. Hillary Clinton herself admits that there's smoke, which I think is a stunning admission. No fire, but smoke. Explain that to me. So what's going on is this. Influential foreign entity wants to do business, wants access to the Secretary of State or other officials within her control. Influential individual makes large donation to the Clinton Family Foundation or the Clinton Global Initiative. Alternatively, this individual might, let's say, invite Bill Clinton to speak. Because you don't actually think that people are paying millions of dollars for Bill Clinton to give a speech because they want to hear him talk. That's not what these speeches are about, folks. Trust me on this. You don't. What's the top music group? Name me a top music group. I mean, I'm the last person to know, but if you want a big music group to come play a private concert for you, you can do that for under $1 million, guaranteed. And that's music that entertains lots of people. Last time I checked, Hillary Clinton is not an entertaining person to listen to. And Bill's getting senile. The whole point of it is you pay him for the speech and it gets around the any kind of obvious kind of quid pro quo thing. Or alternatively, you just set up a charity and you're saying, hey, we're doing humanitarian work over here. Everything's great. Everything's hunky-dory. Well, what are some examples of this? So literally, the speech thing. What happened? Well, you know that Bill, I think, where was it? He did a speech in Moscow. Got paid something like $500,000 for it. And lo and behold, next thing you know, there's this uranium deal going on. Now, if you haven't heard about the uranium thing, I'll get to that in a second. But basically what you've got is it's just so transparent. And then you've got these emails, and the emails are the ones that link it all together. Okay? The emails are the ones that link it all together because you've got these aides like Huma and Cheryl Mills who are writing back and forth to people. They're literally fixing it. You've got people inside the Family Foundation that say, hey, we need to get this person in. Yeah, we got to get this person in front of the secretary. We got to help this person out. And next thing you know, they are contacting Hillary. And they're letting her know, hey, we got to get this person taken care of. So what we're talking about here is pure and simple quid pro quo. Quid pro quo. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Money being paid to the Clintons in a roundabout way through the foundation to get favors from the U.S. government. And if you think this is exaggerated, that's right. I mean, even the drive-by media, right? Even the mainstream media has accepted and readily confirmed that there are clear instances of where this quid pro quo arrangement existed. For example, media confirmed. I think this was. Let's see, who did this? The New York Times found that there was this $2.3 million donation from the head of Russian government's uranium company. And they had business before the Clinton State Department. They needed clearance, just so you understand. The government wanted to purchase U.S. uranium. Now, uranium is used for what? Nuclear weapons. Kind of a big deal. And last time I checked, it wasn't that long ago that we're signing disarmament agreements with the Soviet Union, okay, where we're agreeing we're going to reduce our warheads, you reduce yours, everybody's good. Remember that? Remember the 80s? Well, Mr. Obama, the 80s are calling and they want their foreign policy back. Okay? Because what happened after this? This is just what we're talking about here. We're talking about the Clintons and the kind of bribery that's going on. So $2.35 million made by a donation made to the Clinton Foundation goes to a, you know, it comes from a Russian-owned uranium company called Uranium One. And next thing you know, right, we give Russia basically the equivalent of one-fifth of our uranium reserves. One-fifth goes to Russia, which, again, you people mocked the New York Times, the same newspaper, mercilessly mocked Romney when he declared in 2012 that you know it's really Russia that's one of our key strategic enemies potentially. Okay, and then yeah, the $500,000 speech in Moscow is a Russian investment bank, and it just so happened that what? That Russian investment bank was the one that was putting together and was involved in the Uranium One deal. So not only did they give almost over $2.25 million over to the Clinton charity, but they probably, and I know the, look, we know these people. We know what the Clintons are like. They were so brazen that they didn't just ask for millions of dollars for their charity, but Bill Clinton put his own personal hand out and said, hey, I want you to sweeten the deal by putting 500 grand right into my back pocket. So when we come back, I want to explain to you what the AP is doing here. And it's actually, I think, part of a concerted effort with the Hillary campaign. And it's smart. Back after this, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
All right, well, welcome back to the program. Reporting to you from an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain, this is Sam Nation Radio. Sam Rzhovsky, 790 KBC, and we are talking about Hillary. You know, I thought of her recently. I saw this article about Karachi, Pakistan. Now, Karachi, they've got diplomacy light over there. Yeah, the military is very powerful and, you know, politically involved. But notwithstanding all of this, they have a new mayor. They have elected a new mayor. Now, the military is not too excited about this guy because he's got a little bit of a shady past. His name is Wasim Akhtar. And he's a former minister, a member of parliament. And, he just got elected mayor. And his term is about to start. And there's only one little bit of a problem. It's a small problem. He's in jail. That's right. You heard me right. Mr. Akhtar is been in prison, I think, something like three months or more. And officials state that it is unlikely that he be released from prison soon. Meaning, and believe this or not, okay, apparently this kind of thing flies over there. They can't remove him from office. He's under this indictment, but, you know, he's claiming it's political. Of course, sound familiar. But I feel like the solution that Mr. Akhtar and his staff are suggesting might be a solution for Hillary. Well, you know, everybody's saying, what if Hillary actually ends up getting indicted? Because, of course, it's awkward indicting somebody who is a candidate for president, slightly more awkward indicting somebody who is actually president. Here's the solution. So, Mr. Akhtar's people suggested that since this thing, this stalemate, as they're calling it, is likely to go on for many months, they're going to ask the government to let him have an office in jail. That's right. He just, you know, it'd be better if he was sitting behind his desk at City Hall, but in light of the situation, they're suggesting that maybe he be able to do his job from inside the prison. And so he's asking for, what is it here, a telephone line, computer, and all sorts of paraphernalia that would allow him to run the city. Can't make this stuff up. But that, wouldn't that be, could you just imagine? Yeah. Well, first of all, Bill would love Hillary in prison, period. I mean, can you imagine having her under lock and key? It was, well, you know, the insiders always say that once Bill became governor, but later, especially when he became president, their Secret Service details, their protection details would coordinate their whereabouts. And so Bill, you know, was as president, was guaranteed that Hillary would never bust him because his detail and her detail would communicate, and they would purposely, you know, and they would actually delay her. They would tell her, you can't move right now. And she'd be steaming mad, but you can't do anything about it. And interestingly enough, well, maybe you're not surprised by this. A lot of people say this is just simply because it has nothing to do so much with the president taking priority over the first ladies, you know, POTUS versus FLOTUS, you know, president having a higher position. It comes down to the fact that her Secret Service hated her, just hated Hillary. And so, and they like Bill. Bill's a nice guy. So anyway, Hillary, worst case scenario, you know, she can run the country from jail. Now, we're talking about this Clinton Crime Family Foundation pay to play. And here's some examples of it. For example, there's a Crown Prince of Bahrain. He wanted a sit down with Secretary Clinton, and he was rebuffed. He was turned away. So what did he do? He ended up giving donations that totaled about $32 million to the Clinton Global Initiative. $32 million. And then what did he do? He reached out to Doug Band, who Douglas Band, one of the executives over there at the foundation, and whose email, I mean, telling you, this guy has emails back and forth with Huma. And this is, I want to get to Huma here for a second. Because when Hillary went into office, when she accepted the position of Secretary of State, she signed this memorandum of understanding, which is kind of like a contract, right, with Obama, with the White House, saying that she wasn't going to have any direct communication with her foundation. So what did she do? She had her closest aide, who travels around with her everywhere, do all the communicating for her. And the email trail shows that, for example, Doug Band here would email Huma. Huma would email Secretary Clinton, of course, on her homebrew server that she was hoping would never get discovered. And then Secretary Clinton would respond to Huma, and Huma would respond back to Doug Band. Or alternatively, these communications would go through Cheryl Mills or others. Now, does this pass the smell test? It doesn't. Because next thing you know, you've got this Prince Salman guy donates $32 million. He's got an audience with Hillary Clinton. And it's not just foreign people. It's also guys locally. There's this guy, Casey Wasserman. He's a sports entertainment guy in Hollywood. And he's donated somewhere between $5 to $10 million. And he needed to get some athlete. He signed a foreign athlete. He needed to get him in the country. And the problem was this foreign athlete had a criminal record. Oops. Normally, we don't admit aliens who have a criminal record. Well, an exception was made after he contacted Doug Band. So we talk about political corruption. And remember that guy, we talked about him last week. We talked about the poor governor, poor incarcerated governor of Illinois. Blagojevich, that's right. And Blagojevich is doing some hard time. And what did he do? Try to sell Barack Obama's vacated Senate seat. And what he did was he went to people who knew he knew wanted the seat, and he said, "Hey, give me money. Hey, I'll put you in that seat," because he had appointment power to fill the rest of that term. And you know, in politics, once you fill a seat, the next time that person runs, they're an incumbent. And incumbents get elected because people are dumb. So there it is. It wasn't put money in my pocket as much as it was, you know, hey, get money for my campaign and da 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 da. And that was the pitch. Help my campaign out. Help my campaign out. And I will see to it that you get into the Senate seat. So we're talking about the Clintons. And what the Clintons did with their foundation is exactly what he did, except they added a layer. And the other thing is they're the Clintons. I mean, that's true. But all they did was set up a charity and said, "Hey, there's no email out there. I guarantee it. There's no email out there that says Hillary Clinton will see you or will help you if you donate." And that's not what the AP story is about. The big story that broke this week, okay, if you're just tuning in, is the Associated Press comes out and says, look at all these connections. Look at all these. They're playing connect the dots. Look at all these of the 300 donations. 240 of them led to connections, led to favors being made. And that is just an uncomfortable amount. And it led Hillary to declare that, well, to admit that there's smoke, but not fire. Which I think is just silly and absurd. But again, there are not going to be any smoking gun emails about, hey, send us $1 million and we'll take care of it. But it was absolutely, totally, fundamentally understood. So it, you know, these speeches, and this is the dark side of politics, paying people to come in and give a speech. It really is just a way to garner. It's just a way to garner a favor. That's all it is. If you think for a minute that this behavior is going to change or stop, abate in any way, if Hillary Clinton is elected president, you're out of your mind. Because here, think about one of the things that the Clinton Cash Book came out with, and if you remember, this is the book by Peter Schweitzer, where he details all the different ways that they made money. The personal wealth of the Clintons rose something to like $32 million. So remember when she left, they left the White House and they were dead broke. Remember that? By her own admission, dead broke. And now they're worth north of 30, maybe as high as $50 to $100 million. And it's all because of this, and it's all because of this graft machine. And they're able to do it because Bill is collecting the money on the speeches. He's not in public life. He's just her spouse. You can't stop Bill from doing anything. And then you've got Chelsea involved, which is also absurd. The whole family is involved. And she's selling access and selling favors from the State Department. Now imagine, what will it be? What will happen when she has the entire power of the federal government behind her? The only difference will be is you take that $32 million, you put a zero behind it. Because I guarantee you, these people are going to sell this country for every last dollar that they can get. They are going to absolutely ensure that they are set and covered. They'll even do it just for 4 years. It's a calculated thing. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about something they're doing in India that's really smart to stop car accidents. And here's a clue. It has nothing to do with cars. Back after this, 790 KABC.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
And we're back. Sam Marjowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. India, you know, I'll give you a pro tip for traveling or even just going to an ethnic restaurant. If you go to and get Indian food, don't order the porterhouse. That's right. If you didn't know it already, Indians don't eat beef. It's because cows are sacred over there. In fact, cows are so sacred in India. Maybe you didn't know this. They really aren't even allowed to interfere with them. So you have these pictures from India all the time of a cow wandering onto the road and just hanging out there. And you know, you have to be really polite to the cow because it's a sacred animal. So you have to kind of massage it out of the way, if anything. But you can't shoo the cow. You can't, you know. So the problem is, if you're a driver in India, you got to look out for cows. So what happens at night? It's a good question. Imagine you're driving along a dark Indian road. It's hot, it's miserable, and it stinks. And then out of nowhere, bam, you hit a cow. Don't worry. Okay, now this has happened all the time. Because not only are you going straight to Indian hell, but you also now have damage to your car and all this stuff. So what have they done? Problem solved. Let's paint the cow horns with glow-in-the-dark paint. This is serious. This is serious. Now, I don't know if it's religiously acceptable, but apparently, yeah. So police in central India are painting glow-in-the-dark stripes on the horns of stray cattle so as to prevent motorists from crashing into the animals when they wander the roads at night. Apparently, there have been a lot of road accidents, and they've tried everything. I mean, they've tried to set up fencing and this and that, but apparently, stray cattle, giant traffic menace in India, and there are hundreds and hundreds of these bovines roaming freely on roads across the country. So, that's it. Now, the real question is, if you're in India, you're driving along, what do? You hit a cow, all of a sudden your car's a mess, you're hurt, you're everything. So what do you... Well, of course, you call Sweet James. That's what you do. Attorney James Bergener. When you're in an accident, it could be with a cow, could be with another car, probably with another car here. Because, you know, they don't have any loose cows. So they say in Texas. I mean, those cows all get rounded up and turned into delicious steaks. But... yeah, but if you're in an accident, you know, what'll happen is eventually it's going to come down to dealing with the other guy's insurance company. And that's not a position you want to be in, okay? They're not going to be fair with you. They're not going to take care of you. And I know you might be thinking, hey, I don't really need to do this. I don't want to get a lot of money. I'm not looking to get something that I don't deserve. And the thing is, there's a lot of people just like you. But all I'm saying is, what I tell all of my friends that are in accidents, just give them a call. Call James Bergener, have him talk to him about your case. Get the lowdown. See if there's anything that they can do. Because you've got a lot of questions after an accident, and you can't rely on the insurance company to give you straight answers to those questions. So... James Bergener, he's not a jack-of-all-trades attorney. This is just what he does. He does car accidents, injury accidents, any type of injury, even if it involves an animal. Car, motorcycle, truck, bicycle, accidents, slip and fall, dog bites, pedestrians, all kinds of accidents. Sweet James will take care of you. What do you do? What is it? That's right. You call 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021 or visit sweetjames.com. All right. Now, we're talking, if you've just tuned in and are wondering, no, we're not going to talk about cows. Although, well, thematically, the Hillary Clinton story does fit in a little bit. You know, I always like to hit the primary source document because just last segment I was talking to you about the pledge, the memorandum of understanding that Hillary Clinton signed. And I want to read, she wrote this back in January of 2009. She signed this letter. And it was written at a time when Hillary Clinton was being vetted for Secretary of State. And I'll read to you the first couple lines here of this memorandum. By the way, it's addressed to a Mr. Thiessen, who is a deputy legal advisor and an ethics official, okay, with the Department of State. So he's the guy, he's part of the crew that is investigating prospective nominees for the position. Dear Mr. Thiessen, I am committed. This is Hillary Clinton. I am committed to the highest standards of ethical conduct for government officials. I read that line and I almost fell out of my chair. I'm committed to the highest standards for ethical. Okay. All right. Well, if confirmed as Secretary of State, as required, and then she cites the U.S. Code, and hear me out on this. I'm reading from a letter that was written and signed by Hillary Clinton as a precondition to her being confirmed to her appointment as Secretary of State. And I quote, if confirmed, I will not participate personally and substantially in any particular matter that has a direct and predictable effect on my financial interests or those of any person whose interests are imputed to me. Bill and whatever. This is it. This isn't just about Hillary. Everybody involved around her has profited. Remind me to tell you about Tony Rodham. His company profited. Her brother. I will not participate personally and substantially in any particular matter that has a direct and predictable effect on my financial interests or those of any person whose interests are imputed to me unless I first obtain a written waiver or qualify for a regulatory exemption, da 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 da. And these, if you look these code sections up, they're very narrow. This is a joke. It's unbelievable. And what does this mean? To me, this is so important because it's about credibility. Forget it, jailing Hillary. I 100% believe this is likely criminal what she's done. Maybe. Possibly even treasonous, like giving away a fifth of the U.S. strategic reserves of uranium to a Russian company because they pay you $32 million in the back channel. And by the way, slip a little, you know, $500K into Bill Clinton's back pocket for giving a speech to an investment bank in Moscow that's tied to the deal. But what it really does is it absolutely undermines any shred of credibility that this woman has when she lies to your face. If you are a Hillary Clinton supporter, this is indefensible because it is a blatant, manifest falsehood. So when she says, I'm not going to do this, I'm going to distance myself, it's a lie. When she says, I'm healthy, I'm fine, there's nothing to see here, it's a lie. When she says these emails aren't an issue, it's not a problem, there's nothing, it's a lie. This woman, there's a pattern of lies, of deception, compiled, I think almost more importantly, with this, with a almost criminal intent to enrich herself off the government. So why in goodness sake? I mean, I hear all these arguments about why we shouldn't turn the levers of the government over to Trump and why he's a crazy person. But at least Trump comes into office with some money of his own. It was my biggest argument for Romney back in the day. I know I cannot stand politicians who have come into office with nothing and leave as multimillionaires. Let me explain this to you. The salary as president, I think, what is it now? $600K a year? But it used to be when Bill Clinton was in office, when Bill Clinton was office, the salary was somewhere around $250,000 or $280,000. So the most that Bill Clinton ever made as an elected official was $280,000. So you take that, add another income to it. Did Hillary ever have a successful private sector job? No, not since the Rose Law Firm. And even there, she was there because she was the governor's wife. And so you have these politicians who at most make $280,000 a year and all of a sudden are out of office and have $32 to $50 million in personal wealth off the backs of their positions as elected officials. It's not right. It's sick. And it has to be stopped. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you how it's going to happen. And I'll give you some news that is not being reported anywhere else. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
And welcome back to the program. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And we've been talking about the Clintons and all their various financial shenanigans. And, well, so now the question really is, how can it all be stopped? Because this cannot continue. And I read last segment a bit of the memo, the Memorandum of Understanding, the subject of which I think ironically was ethics undertakings. But yes, it was where Hillary Clinton promised to avoid any conflicts of interest, financial interests, or those of any person whose interests are imputed to me. And I talked about Tony Rodham, her brother. And so it was an interesting thing. You guys remember Haiti? Remember how the Clinton Global Initiative went down there? And hand in hand with President Bush, went down and distributed tons of Clinton cash, but not actually very little amount of Clinton cash. Mostly U.S. taxpayer dollars were distributed down there. And guess who benefited? That's right. Suddenly, the Washington Post confirmed this, right? The Washington Post. They said that Hillary's brother, Tony Rodham, he serves on the board of a mining company. And this mining company ends up getting, at all times perfectly together, a lucrative gold exploitation permit. So Haiti gives out very few of these. They're for foreign entities to come in and look for gold. And they're all, this is like a unicorn in the wild, this permit. And lo and behold, Secretary of State Clinton's brother and Bill Clinton's brother-in-law gets this permit. And this is all while billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars are being given to Haiti in the wake of the earthquake. And the Post declared, hey, Rodham's company won one of the first two gold mining permits the Haitian government had issued in more than 50 years. You know what, Hillary? Where there's smoke, there's fire. So, again, I like to wrap up the week for you because, you know, it's Saturday afternoon, and we want to kind of look back retrospectively and see where the week went. And in just a quick aside, let me tell you, this is a media bias alert. We have the Clinton News Network, also perennially referred to as CNN. And right as the AP story is breaking, I'm talking nuclear bomb going off, you have mainstream media reporting that Clinton's emails going back and forth clearly show quid pro quo. And as that is going on, CNN's website for the entire day had as their lead story this: how healthy is Trump, really? Letter from his doctor raises more questions than answers. And then it shows a picture of Trump. It almost looks like he is making love to some kind of a pork cutlet. Well, that's what it looks like. I don't know. Missy, I don't know if you agree, but there it is. And yeah, he's at some county fair. Poor guy. Can you imagine running for office? This has got to be bad for everybody. You run for office, you got to go to all these county fairs and eat really terrible food. And you never, it's just terrible. But anyway, so that was CNN leads that day, the day that it broke. What was it? Wednesday. And just to give you some contrast here, MSNBC, which used to be the left of Radio Moscow. Front page, lead story, the Clinton conundrum. And it shows a very worried Hillary Clinton. And then, you know, and then basically all these, you know, sub stories that discuss the issue going on. And that's it. You can't print fake news and expect people to go to you. It doesn't matter if you're a Clinton supporter or you're not, or you're a Trump supporter or you're, politically atheist. It doesn't matter. You go to a news channel to get the news. And if people are talking about what's going on, if they're talking about this AP story and it's the lead everywhere, and suddenly you maybe have one of your presets on your remote is CNN, and you go to CNN and they're talking about absolutely nothing related to that, you're going to change the channel. So CNN is just hemorrhaging viewers, and MSNBC is beating them, and this is why. It's exactly why. We went into great depth on it last week. I'm not gonna get too far down there. So, Matt, so go to the podcast. We got it up on the website, samnation.com. Now, all right, what's happened? Well, Manafort is out. Manafort was out last Friday, Saturday, and Trump has a new team. And I talked about this last week, and I said, look, there's going to be a groundbreaking shift happening right now. And I talked about why it was important to make that shift. And since last week, a lot of the same things I said on the show are now being parroted by other people in the news and other talking heads, and among them is this contention. It's very important that Manafort fulfilled an important purpose. At a critical time in the campaign, Manafort was an inside guy who needed to be the architect and the lead on an inside play. And that being, of course, rounding up enough delegates to secure the Republican nomination. And you know, that wasn't that long ago. So when we talk about having 70 odd days to go to election day, we're really only going back 2 months to Trump's last shakeup when Lewandowski was booted and Manafort took over. But what Manafort lacked, of course, there's no ideology there. Manafort was a political operative. It's a political hack. And when you need a hatchet job done and round up the delegates and put people's heads in vices and that kind of thing, Manafort's your man. But when you're in the ideas stage of the campaign, and I promise you, this has to come down, these campaigns have to come down to an ideology, especially during a year like this one, which is to say, we are in a year that is all about people being fed up with the establishment. That is the story. And so you can't have an establishment guy leading an anti-establishment candidate. There's gonna be friction. A lot of hay also is being made of Trump now maybe massaging and adjusting his message about illegal immigration. I watched a very interesting thing. I watched a rally. In fact, I think it was the town hall meeting that he had on with Hannity. What was it? Wednesday night. And in the town hall, and he's been doing this in various events. So Trump will start to say to the crowd, now look, what about these gang members, these illegal gang members? Stay or go? The crowd says, go, boot them. And then he gradually is, well, now what about somebody who's committed one crime or done something bad? You know, now they broke the law. They came here and they stayed too long. They overstayed a visa. They didn't get a visa. What he's doing, and even though the crowd, of course, here's the most important thing. The Trumpists in the crowd are all having conniption fits because they want everybody booted. They want everybody rounded up and tossed out. But those are just the diehards that are going to the rallies. A lot of Trump supporters are mainstream, believe it or not. And a lot of these Trump supporters understand that it's just not realistic to round everybody up, put them in paddy wagons, and ship them out across the border. So they get this. And what Trump is doing is very carefully pivoting his position and making it sound like he's going out on a listening tour. It's extremely smart. So, where are the polls and where does all this, what does this all mean right now? Contextually. And I don't put a lot of stock in polls, folks. I really don't. But it is, from time to time, interesting to go and look at what the polling says to kind of check in where we're at. And don't let anyone tell you that it's a runaway race for Hillary. Because if you go to CNN.com, trust me, this past week, it's a runaway race for Hillary. That's what I've been hearing and reading. It's a tight race. It was a tight race as of last week, even before Trump's pivot. It was a tight race. And where was it last week? Somewhere like 44, what was it? 44 to 43. 44 Hillary, 43 Trump. Where is it today, a week later? It's virtually a dead heat. And I'm using the LA Times tracking poll, which I'm just going to assume right now is using a sample that is heavily Democrat. And so it's within the margin of error, clearly dead heat, tied, there you go. But if you go, and a lot of people don't go all the way to the end of an article and all the way to the end of these polls to look at all these charts, but we do here. This is my job. I do this, I take this seriously because I want to come to you and give you the information that matters. A week ago, Latino support for Hillary versus Trump, 58 to 26%. You know where it is as of this week? Well, according to the LA Times, it has tightened up. 58 turned lead to 53%. So there's 53% for Hillary, and the 26% support for Trump went up 10 percentage points, went to 36%. And this is in the Democrats' own rigged poll. Because here's the thing. The Democrats will always try to play this political game. And we're out of time. We're going to get into greater depth on this tomorrow. We're back at 6 p.m. Go to the website, samnation.com, and please email me if you're angry. I know some of you are. I'm already getting the emails now. sam@samnation.com. And go to the website, get the podcast, get the Twitter, get everything there. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC.